Hey, it's John Engle, and I'm excited to share that registration is now live for Grid Tech Connect Forum California. Join us in Newport Beach, June 24th through the 26th for the Interconnection event. We're bringing together utilities, developers, regulators, and advocates to take on one of the biggest challenges facing the energy transition, both at the DG and utility scale levels. Click the link in the episode description and use promo code PODCAST to save 10% on admission. Join our partners from the Department of Energy, NREL, Southern California Edison, PG&E, CAISO, Sunrun, NG, Convergent, AES, and so many more for this impactful event. We'll see you there. Hello and welcome to another episode of This Week in Clean Tech, a roundup of the week's biggest stories you need to know in climate and clean energy in 15 minutes or less. Today is Friday, March 15th, 2024. I'm Renewable Energy World Editor-in-Chief John Engle. Cyrus Valentine from Grist will be joining us shortly, but for now I'm joined once again by Clean Tech PR veteran Mike Casey of TigerCom. Mike, share your voice with our audience because it's not great.
Dude, way to set me up for success. That's awesome. Here, introducing my co-moderator who's voice handicapped. Show him your handicap, Mike.
Tell him why. It's wholesome.
Because I was we were at my son's nail biter opening season soccer game that went into double overtime and still stayed tied up with the best team in Virginia last night. So it's unwise to go to such games the night before you tape your show with John Engle.
Did they win?
They tied.
Oh.
It was amazing.
And this is what you get? This is the souvenir you get? You get a tie and a hoarse voice?
Hey, man. Right. You know what?
I've been there.
It's awesome.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you got to do that. And we'll power through here. We want to thank all our listeners for every week sending in those story recommendations and nominations for Clean Tech of the Week. You can do that at rewclarionevents.com. All right, Mike, get us started.
A long time New York Times reporter Keith Bradshaw, reporting from China, writes the story, How China Came to Dominate the World in Solar Energy. Over to you, John.
Yeah, so huge year for China's solar industry. They installed more solar panels last year than the U.S. has ever installed. Wholesale prices of panels sold were slashed nearly in half, and exports of fully assembled panels climbed 38%, while its exports of key components almost doubled. But this coming year, they plan to do even more, accelerating solar farm construction as well as wind and hydro projects. And with an economy that's slowed over the last decade, China hopes to use emerging industries like solar to re-energize it. Mike, what do you think?
So this story points out some advantages that China has. I mean, they're not surprising. Lower wages, subsidized land, command and control economy, access to low interest loans, and a streamlined process to build stuff. So I think these advantages should put to rest for good the well-worn line that the ideology of reality crowd likes to offer, that we shouldn't clean up our energy supply because China won't. Well, China is, and they're winning the race to the clean energy future. And I think that that's perhaps the biggest takeaway here. Europe and the U.S. do face high electricity prices and regulatory hurdles, but we also have this drag coefficient from the naysayers and the climate tech deniers that is not helpful. John, story number two.
Yeah, this one is from Casey Crownhart, who we've featured a couple of times on the show, MIT Tech Review, with the story titled, Emissions Hit a Record High in 2023, Blame Hydropower. I'm not sure I love the headline. I know what she's trying to say. Mike, your thoughts.
So in climate solutions, there's a lot of talk about feedback loops. Here's a not good feedback loop. So global climate disruption is driving drought around the world. Last year's droughts dried up reservoirs and dropped hydropower generation. So last year, the world added 20 gigawatts of hydropower capacity, but the amount of electricity that all that hydropower produced fell, with the worst effects being felt in China with a 4.9% drop in hydropower production. So the big picture is that global climate disruption causing fossil fuels were used to fill the gap, which is precisely what we should not be doing. And in fact, 2023 saw energy-related carbon pollution grow 1% around the world, but hydropower shortfall that the story is talking about accounted for nearly half of that rise, which is kind of crazy. So this isn't nothing. Hydropower shortfalls had a greater impact on global carbon pollution than that produced by the post-pandemic recovery of the aviation industry. John, what'd you think?
Well, and as I mentioned, I didn't love the headline because I think blame the source maybe isn't as fitting as blame climate change and pollution and the decisions we've made for decades. And another quick point, on the 20 gigawatts of hydro we've added globally, almost nothing's getting built in the U.S. And that's a permitting and NIMBYism story in and of itself. So we don't need to go down that road. But just to save hydro from getting smashed over the head on this story review, we know that global climate disruption will lead to more drought, less snowpack, more variability in precipitation, which means we cannot rely on hydropower generation to remain as consistent. According to a 2021 study, about half of countries with hydropower capacity could see a 20% reduction in generation per decade. So that's the point to watch. And when you think about the U.S., I think the Pacific Northwest and the Northeast has a lot of impact with hydropower and the transfers that we do with Canada. So a story to watch for sure, Mike. What's our third one?
Number three, we have a story written by Gabriel Ingera from Grist called How Changes to Hawaii's Home Battery Program Could Hinder Its Clean Energy Transition. John, what'd you think?
Well, this one kind of sounds familiar, doesn't it? Hawaiian Electric plans to launch a program that will offer households incentives to have their batteries deliver power during peak demand, but the incentives are way less than what they used to be, reminiscent of when Hawaiian Electric slashed compensation rates for solar in 2015. That was a big deal. Rooftop solar installations fell by over 50% as a result, and that change also sparked a huge uptake in home batteries. The utility wants to integrate those batteries into a VPP and started subsidizing household participation, but the new rates would pay battery owners less than the retail price of electricity, reducing the incentive to enroll. We've seen some utilities do this really, really well, Green Mountain Power being one of them with the bring your own battery. Others are maybe missing the mark. Mike, what'd you think?
So I think, John, to your point, we're hearing echoes here of net metering 3.0. Hawaii is an important clean energy transition bellwether. It's expensive to import fossil fuels. They don't have a grid that they can buy or sell power with. And that means a much higher penetration of rooftop solar and fewer options for managing the variability in solar production. So it really calls for battery storage. But to your point, John, I think that what we're seeing here is an argument for lowering what people get to charge the utility based on the same equity arguments that are made against rooftop solar. And, you know, I've cast a lot of shadow on those arguments. I don't think they really hold water, but the utilities are really good at making them. John, what's your fourth story?
Speaking of holding water, we need to get you a water to get through the last couple of – I'm sorry. I'm being so tough on you. You know how much I love you, Mike. This is just friendly banter.
I want our listeners to know that John Engel has single-handedly stopped me from using the no pen
again. No, don't. It was so perfect. Leave it last episode. Throw, you know, put it in your drawer. We got to move on from no.
Come to my rescue and tell John Engel the no pen needs to be brought back so we're more like Jim Cramer.
All right, Mr. Engel, have your way. Okay, so our fourth story. This was a spicy one if you live on energy Twitter like I do, Mike. A podcast episode from Heatmap and the show Shift Key, hosted by Robinson Meyer and Jesse Jenkins, featuring Emily Pontecarvo, titled Does Rooftop Solar Actually Help the Climate? And this really pitted our industry against each other for probably four or five days. It was pretty remarkable. Mike, what'd you take away?
So note to selves, we've had Emily on the show before, like her reporting. So I think if you install solar panels on your roof, you produce carbon-free renewable electricity that displaces the burning of fossil fuels. And that's clearly a net carbon pollution win if you're living in a state where they burn fossil fuels to generate electricity in the middle of the day. But, and here's the but, in California, places like it, when you're adding solar panels to your roof means you're mostly competing with utility scale renewables that already dominate midday production. So those utility scale sources do provide cheaper power. Like in the U.S., building 1 megawatt of solar in a large landfill or farm is 3 to 4 times cheaper than constructing that same capacity in 10 kilowatt increments across multiple homes. Here's the thing I think they're not accounting for. Americans like their freedom, and they like the freedom to produce their own energy. And I think there is a serious social appeal, and dare I say, even a marketing benefit for clean energy, for protecting and enhancing residential rooftop solar installation. I don't really think they took full account of those factors. John, what do you think?
Yeah, I think the initial reaction was Jesse Jenkins thinks utility scale good, rooftop bad. And I think that it was a more nuanced conversation than wound up in energy Twitter world. So I think the point that Jesse was trying to make was at present, utility scale is much cheaper than rooftop solar. We need to make rooftop solar cheaper. And that comes down to permitting. That comes down to our rate structures. It's a policy battle to get to parity with countries like Australia and elsewhere, where the cost of rooftop solar is much, much lower. So I agree with you. Baked into that conversation has to be resilience. It has to be deferred transmission and distribution upgrades. It has to be land conservation. It has to be that independence. So it is a conversation and debate that doesn't exist well, I believe, in Twitter landscape and in X. But it did anyway. It was kind of fun to see it hashed out on the sidelines. I did not get involved, but an important discussion to still be having. And I think rooftop solar plays an important role. All right, Mike, time for our fifth story and our guest this week.
Cyrus Valentine from Grist. This episode tends to be Grist Fest. He wrote a story called
That's all we do is feature Grist stories. So that's a testament to what you guys are doing, Cyrus.
All right. The IRA has injected $240 billion into clean energy. The U.S. still needs more. Love that. Cyrus, welcome. For people who haven't read this piece, what is the big takeaway you think they should have?
Yeah, I feel like the big takeaway is, I mean, it's in the headline, right? $240 billion being injected into clean energy through the IRA. And that's really looking at private investment primarily. Like, I mean, we've been seeing, right, an increase in investment every year since at least like 2018, if not before. But really since the IRA was passed, there's been this like increase in the rate of growth in the past couple of years. And so in the calendar year of 2023, there was that $240 billion figure invested through private dollars alone. And then we look at the 2023 fiscal year. So from October of 2022 to September of 2023, there was $220 billion in total investment in that year. And $34 billion of that was federal investment through tax credits specifically from the IRA.
Cyrus, the scale of this. So you mentioned how the private money has followed the investment by the federal government. And I believe you had a figure in there that was like $5 and change to every $1 coming from the... That's incredible. And have we seen this kind of impact elsewhere in how quickly a piece of legislation like the IRA has shocked the market and really set us on a course for an industrial renaissance that we haven't seen in this country in a long time?
Yeah, that's a really great question. I can't honestly speak to how that has showed up historically with other forms of like similar legislation when you see these like massive sort of tax credits going into different sectors. But yeah, that figure of $1 of for every dollar of federal investment going in, it has generated $5.50 of just straight private equity. And it's a really like fascinating figure that I don't think anyone really expected to see at this rate. But one sort of like interesting caveat that a couple of my sources brought up for this story is that with that ratio, that's going to shift over time. It's not going to stay there. And if anything, it will sort of start to dial back actually a little bit. We're never going to really see true parity, but, a lot of the investments right now are going straight into manufacturing for like the EV supply chain, for solar power, for wind farms and whatnot. So we're seeing a lot of upfront investment that will then later down the road, once products start coming off the assembly line, we'll start having tax credits going towards those, which will then, increase the rate of federal investment over time.
Cyrus, a quick question. Do you think that force multiplier factor, was that the intent, or is that an unexpected effect based on what you see in the rearview mirror and reporting the story?
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely part of the intent of the IRA was to generate that. I mean, the big like $369 billion figure that's been sort of thrown around with respect to how much the IRA could possibly generate, That, I mean, it was definitely just for federal investment, but I think there was always the intent and the expectation that we would see a huge influx of private dollars trying to, I guess, if you will, accumulate as much of those federal tax credits as possible.
John, we're about out of time, so we need to go to our Clean Techer of the Week.
Yeah, this week's Clean Techer of the Week is Riley Neugebauer, solar installer and apprentice at Namaste Solar. She volunteered at a Girls in Science event, which brought girls at a children's museum in Colorado through multiple science stations, including a mini roof and mini solar panel station led by Riley and her colleague. Riley made sure to tell the girls that they could do anything they want when they grow up, including be an electrician. So congratulations to Riley. A nice little story there, Mike.
Nice. I want to give a shout out to our terrific producer, Brian Mendez, and to Alex Peterson and Claire Quirin for helping us identify this week's top stories.
And props to Mike for getting 15 minutes out of those vocal cords. You sound great. You still brought the energy and a good attitude. Thank you to all of our team behind the scenes who helps us put this together, and to Cyrus Valentine for joining us this week. Please subscribe, give us feedback, and share those story recommendations, and of course, your nominations for Clean Tech of the Week. Mike, that's it. We'll see you next week.
Next week's our 30th episode, my friend. See you then.
Hey, it's John Engel, and I'm excited to share that registration is now live for Grid Tech Connect Forum California. Join us in Newport Beach, June 24th through the 26th for the Interconnection event. We're bringing together utilities, developers, regulators, and advocates to take on one of the biggest challenges facing the energy transition, both at the DG and utility scale levels. Click the link in the episode description and use promo code PODCAST to save 10% on admission. Join our partners from the Department of Energy, NREL, Southern California Edison, PG&E, CAISO, Sunrun, NG, Convergent, AES, and so many more for this impactful event. We'll see you there.